From the Far East to the Great West, the podcast that celebrates the red-headed stepchild of the kung fu genre, Bruceploitation. Welcome to the Clones Cast. Here are your hosts, Michael and Matthew.
Welcome to the Clones Cast. Hey, Michael, how you doing?
Matthew, I'm doing good, bud.
I should say welcome back to the Clones Cast. We had a small hiatus there, but here we are back, and I know I've been getting a lot of messages from lots of people asking what the heck's going on and, you know, all of that. I'll just I'll leave that on the cutting room floor, and we'll move on from there. It's just been busy. You know, that's just how it goes, and like Michael, you always point out, these things are, you know, it's like a, it's an act of love for Bruceploitation. So we do it for fun. You know, it's not our day job. So, you know, sometimes we'll get behind, but we love you all and we love that you love what we love. And, yeah, speaking of, I wanted to start this episode without jumping straight into the film, which I think a lot of you know what it is because that's usually the question. Where's Tattoo Connection? Where's Tattoo Connection? But, yeah, let's just start out with some news because I think everybody's dying to know what's happening with the in Michael's world.
A lot. Yeah, well, I think they're more dying about here about your world. You're getting a new house. That's pretty good, important stuff. Yes, big news, big news is that the documentary is getting its world premiere at Tribeca. Depending on when people are listening to this, is June 10th, June 11th, and then I think there's a third showing. But playing Tribeca, man, that's, I mean, it couldn't get much better. Super excited about it. What's really cool, though, is we, as I have done with both the documentary and the book, have been waiting and waiting to the last possible, and in this case, it was literally the last possible second to release them, or at least start processing them, because we wanted to get Bruce Lee interviewed, and as people have probably been paying attention to social media, we did get him. And it was a very last-minute thing. We flew out to Hong Kong. We were only out there for a few days. But man, what a cool dude.
Amazing.
And and what made it even cooler is he came with Chong Do, who's in the Tattoo Connection and probably every other Bruce Lee movie, and he was with him just hanging out. And it was so funny because we were shooting Bruce out on the patio of the hotel we were staying at. And this guy comes out, and he's got a couple of people with him, and this guy's with him with a mask on, a face mask. And I'm looking over at the director, and I'm talking to one of our producers, and Frank Chang, and I'm going, that looks like Chong Do, man. This Chong Do. And they're like, first off, they're not as kind of savvy. Like, who's that? That's the guy I was looking to try to. And then they're going, ah, no, that's not him. And they kept talking. And I finally looked over at him. I went, you're Chong Do. He was like surprised. He was there helping, you know, he was just like getting tea for everybody. And so let me tell you, when I pulled out my posters, I'm like, you're signing these too. And he was great. He was really humbled. And so anyways, it turned into a great, great, moment. And it was a completion to both my book, which I'm going to be pulling. A lot of the people don't realize is, even though we got this great documentary, we get everybody on camera and get to watch them live. And now we have Bruce Lee added to the documentary, which has now made it complete since we've got everybody in there pretty much, you know, that the book is going to be transcripts of a lot of the stuff that we talked about that doesn't make it to the documentary. So that's really cool. And by the time, and for those who are been waiting for the art book, the poster book to come out, which I know is a lot of people, I've been getting a lot of emails about the delays with that. So my apologies on that, but it's really been a matter of both the shutdown and the cost that just went skyrocketing after COVID. But the great thing is we're done. Book looks great and everything should be up and ready and shipping by next month. So we are going to, the remainders of the book will be making available online. So for those who did not get in onto the crowdsourcing campaign, you'll have that ability to get at least a soft, there's two editions of the book. The soft cover will be available. There may be a handful of the hardcover special editions available, but, Yeah, that'll all be rolling out. And as far as the doc's concerned, we'll be doing a premiere, as I said, next in June. We're recording this in May, but it'll be June 10th. And then we've got two other festivals. One, I think, is going to be in Europe. I don't know if I can really announce it yet, but it's going to be in Europe. Another, not the UK, but and then another will be actually in Texas. We'll be in Texas, and I can't announce that yet, but that'll be screening. And I'm hoping to do is, and I shouldn't be saying this on live, but I'm really hoping we get to go do the Hollywood Theater with Dan. That would be
holy cow, yeah.
Yeah, and one of the things I want to do is, since we've got some rare 35 millimeter prints of a couple of films, specifically the real Bruce Lee. We have like one of the original prints of the real Bruce Lee from Seraph and Carol Lexie's. What I'd like to do is personally, is maybe anybody listening wants to pass it on, is go to a couple of venues that we do these, that would do 35 millimeter screenings, and do like the documentary and then do the real Bruce Lee on a 35 millimeter print. So
that would be so cool.
So that's it. And then the last bit of that bit is that we're looking at the end of the year, so like around November. And as of course everybody knows, this, what's so great about 2023 and why we're picking this up is that we're in the sort of the 50th anniversary of the passing of Bruce Lee, but also the 50th anniversary of the birth of the clones. So that's kind of why everything's rolling out at once. And in November, we should be announcing our release of the Blu-ray for this. And along with the Blu-ray, you'll be getting a heap of other announcements. So some great stuff coming for the people that are in love with this genre or kung fu movies in general.
I love it. And then you mentioned Hand of Death. And did you say there's a box set?
Right. Thank you for reminding me. So two other things, yeah, worthy of note, which people probably caught up on. I worked with Arrow Films out of the UK on a couple of projects. One, which ties in what we're talking about today, is The Hand of Death. I think it just came out this week, actually, as we're recording this. Which is a Tantaling movie with Sammo Hung, Jackie Chan, John Woo directed it. Worth a grab, and partly reason it's worth a grab is that I put on there when I was training with Tantaling. At one point I just asked him if he would just like sit down with me and let me talk about his movies and stuff, because I would speak to him like on kind of off the cuff. But I was like, I wanted to get it on videotape, and of course, this is back in the late 90s, almost 2000. It was like a literal VHS recorder. We'd put a VHS tape in the camera and record. So it's not the greatest of quality, but it's a rare, rare interview with Tantaling in English. And you can hear him chatting right after teaching class, and students are walking in and out. But that's worth getting. He does talk about this movie a little bit on there, because one of the things, and we'll talk about this through the episode, is there's a lot of myths and legends around Tantaling and Jim Kelly getting in real fights on the set of the movie, et cetera, et cetera. But I had a chance to talk to both Tantaling, Lee So Nam, and Bruce Lang about this, so who was the fight choreographer. And the last bit, oh, Bruce Lee, right. The Arrow is also putting out the Bruce Lee box set, which is epic, epic, epic. I know everybody's like, oh, not another Bruce Lee thing, but this one, it'll be well worth picking up. The stuff, the material on it, the stuff on Game of Death. I shot two documentaries for these small ones. A 30-minute documentary on Lo Wei and Chris Chen, who was the cinematographer on the first two films that Bruce Lee shot, Fist of Fury and Big Boss. And then I did a more extensive one that's almost an hour long on Bruce Lee working with Tadashi Nishimoto, who was the cinematographer of Way of the Dragon. And got a lot of great people, you know, contributing, like Andre Morgan, you know, who will actually be in New York, by the way, with Angela Mao at the screening, the 50th year screening of Enter the Dragon.
Whoa.
So Andre Morgan, got Andy Chang, Peter Schweer, who is one of the thugs in Way of the Dragon. He's in it. I got Bolo Jr., Bolo's son, John Krang, Courtney Joyner, who's a fantastic spaghetti Western movie enthusiast, historian, writer, director. Anyways, got a lot of good people on that. Those documentaries, plus the rare stuff they got of Bruce from the big bosses in it. There's some scenes you probably have never seen before, cut from the movie, and incredible from the negative footage from the original Game of Death stuff that Bruce Lee shot, including the original fight with Ninasan. I mean, and it's being pulled and called from a print that they uncovered, long never used. So anyways, it's worthy of getting and picking up, and I highly recommend it.
I love it.
Yakety yak, yak, yak.
No, that's
had to get all that in, man.
That's terrific.
Do we have enough time to do the movie now?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, this one was a long time in the making, considering I think we talked about doing this like 8 months ago or something. So a bunch of people said they watched it and was ready for this to come out.
Oh, okay.
And then we sat on it. But yeah, Tattoo Connection, 1978, Lee So-nam. We got Jim Kelly in there. We got Bolo, of course. We got Tan Tao Ling. And who else is notable?
Well, Chang Dao, who we were just talking about, which's great about this movie, is both him and Bolo are easily considered the two most ubiquitous fighters in every Bruceploitation, even Kung Fu movie for that matter. And here they are playing partners in this film, which is, I think, fantastic because they partner up.
That makes perfect sense. Yeah. I know exactly who you're talking about now because I even made a note here to ask you about him because he was obviously getting a lot of screen credit and his fight style was cool and, you know, there was like all this stuff going on that I could tell, you know, that he's somebody I either knew already or, you know, I'd seen in something else. And yeah, it just wasn't tracking with me. I don't have the memory you have for all of this. So
yeah, their faces, you know what I mean? Like you've seen him a million times, but yeah, you're right. Exactly. So
yeah, I'm just like, yeah, he looks like someone I know, but I don't know. But that's cool. Yeah, well, great. Well, this one, it starts out with a fight, which I thought was a fun way to start it. We have... we don't know who he is yet, but just a dude coming to the docks, and he says he's looking for a fat dude who stole from his boss or something like that. Anyway, it's a good fight sequence. He eventually has to fight the big boss, and then he finally wins and gets to take Fat Dog back to his boss.
Yeah, and these openings are always great because Lee So-nam is so well versed and always slipping in one good little, you know, fight scene in the opening, whether it's the Hot, Cool, and the Vicious or the Leg Fighters or whatever. You almost always know the very first scene in a Lee So-nam movie is going to have one fight.
Yeah, and I was out at the docks, which we've seen many times. Have you been to that location? You know, it's got all the big shipping containers.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's hard to tell exactly where that one is, but there's a couple of those, two actually, that I've gone by over in Hong Kong when I was, not the last time I was there, but the time before.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, so then we get back to the gang. They were going to go ahead and kill Fat Dog, and our guy's like, no, you know what? I told him we wouldn't do that. So he brand him. They break his arm, and they say, you're no longer one of us.
Well, and you know what we should mention, too, actually, pull it up before because we'll blow past it, was of interest, is the opening credits. Mm-hmm. The opening credits of this, you know, sometimes there's a couple of variations on this, but the which I love, by the way, there's very cartoon drawn credits. Interesting to look how Tan Tao Ling is sort of shoved into like third or fourth billing in a stack of other characters like Jim Kelly why am I blanking on Chan Sing? Excuse me. Get the sort of lead credit. But the other part of the credits is interesting is that the song is Anders Nelson.
Yeah.
And Anders Nelson did the Super Dragon song, the one that's the song about Bruce Lee. And he was also one of the actors in Way of the Dragon with Bruce Lee. So,
and that's exactly what I had in my notes next. All caps. That theme music. I loved it.
Okay, good, good, good. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was called Diamonds.
Diamonds.
Yeah, but it was great. I was just like, what a great way to start. Anyway, I'm putting that theme right here. Cool. So, yeah, now we've switched over. We had that fight. We had our cool our theme and or our credits, and now we've got this Westerner getting out of the airport, and it's the classic, like, you know, 70s briefcase with the handcuff on
chain,
it.
Chain, yeah.
And you know what's going to happen, right? When you see whenever you see a briefcase with a chain, you know that it's not going to remain on that.
You know you're going to see an axe coming up.
Totally. So they get in a limo. We see they're getting followed. It's Bolo and crew. They, you know, stop them, beat them up, steal the stuff. It was pretty uneventful.
He even gets hit with the axe a few times, and he somehow is okay.
Totally. Yeah, you know, in a little while, like, he's in the hospital. I think it's maybe once Jim shows up, but we'll get there. But, yeah, it was really funny because it may have actually been at this part. There's a point where he's lying in the hospital bed and the police come and they're like, right. They kind of suspect him. And he's like, I'm the one in the hospital bed. And I'm like, why are you so beat up? Like, you know, it's like we watch these things and people get absolutely annihilated with fists and feet, and somehow he got pushed around a little bit and he's in this hospital bed like
I know the token white guy survived. What's up?
Yeah. Hilarious. Cool. Well, then we cut to one of the thieves. I guess this is I don't know why we have him around except that he is what he is. I call him Hot Dog Boy because he's eating his hot dog, but his girlfriend thinks that he was involved and he admits he just stole the cars. And
well, he of course he does end up playing a fairly, you know, important part in the movie, at least in the first act or so. But it's another example, I think, sometimes of what Lee Soo-nam, at least in this film, and I've seen it in other films that he's done, where we do have a couple of storylines we're following this movie. It's not like a straight line following Jim Kelly or following Tan Tao Ling through
right.
this. In fact, and we'll talk about it, I'm sure, but there's some interesting characters, the way that they're played, you know, walking the line of good and bad, but it gets a little, you start to get a little sidetracked,
right.
You know. What's
totally.
That?
I see what you mean with him in particular, because he starts out as kind of the bad guy part of them, and later on he wants to switch sides, and yeah, it is what it is, but it just meant more people get beat up, and more people that our heroes have to save, and yeah.
Hong Kong's a city of crime.
So we cut over to San Francisco. There's the insurance meeting.
The stock shots of San Francisco anyway.
Right. Yeah, exactly. $3 million in insurance money. We finally, I think we're already 15 minutes into the film, we finally see Jim Kelly.
Yes, Jim Kelly. And also in the board of the Diamond board, there's Bill Lake is in there. Bill Lake's another Guaylo actor who appeared in like Bruce Lee's Greatest Revenge as the Spencer, and I think he plays O'Hara in Bruce Lee, The Man, The Myth when they're reenacting Enter the Dragon.
Okay, yeah.
I do want to make a little point about Jim Kelly before we go on with this. I used to run into Jim Kelly all the time, and he in weird, strange ways. Like I one time I ran into him at a commercial audition. I'd met him already a couple of times, so I'd already known him or at least spoken with him a few times.
He would have been perfect for Slim Jims.
Yeah, that's right, Slim Jims. No kidding. I don't remember what it was, but I remember it was in Hollywood, and he was in there. There was martial arts involved, so that's why he was there. But
gotcha.
He also used to. I was working out at this time in a gym in Marina del Rey, which is kind of near Venice in Santa Monica. And he would come in and play tennis. There was these indoor tennis courts, and I would sometimes be in there. I'd be lifting weights, and I'd see him in there playing tennis. And then the last time I ever saw him, and this is kind of why it's sort of interesting, I was running a marathon in San Diego. And I'd gone down there a couple days early, and I was walking down the street one evening, and I was passing a real estate office. And in the window of the real estate office were the headshots of the realtors that were working there. I looked, and Jim Kelly was up on there. I was like going, holy crap, man. He came down here and became a realtor, you know. I was like, wow. And he was like probably – I think he was using his like actual headshot, you know, from acting. And then the next morning we were getting – it was the day before the race actually. I'm in a cafe down the street, and I'm sitting there, and who walks in but Jim Kelly, and he goes in there to work. This time I went up to him, and I talked to him, I said, hey, Jim, how are you? And, you know, we didn't know each other really well, but we would just bump into each other, and we talked for a few minutes, and he was down there saying, yeah, he's down there now hanging out, working, and et cetera, et cetera. And then I walked out, and that was the last time I ever saw him, you know, after, you know, he passed away a few years later.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, what a funny coincidence. You're like... Jim Kelly's just part of your life all of a sudden.
Can you imagine Jim Kelly selling you a house?
No, it just blows my mind.
Yeah.
I'm just too busy looking good.
Yeah. That's right. But I'd like to complete this little thought with this. He has always fascinated me because he's such an interesting persona. And this is going to be maybe makes some people upset, but you know, he wasn't like the greatest martial artist. I mean, this guy, you know, he was like, he had a little bit of, his kicks were a little funky and weird and strange, yeah. You know, and he had, you know, with his filming, I think sometimes when he would be involved with the choreography, and there was a number of films that he got involved with it, that I think that maybe didn't always play to his best. I think when Bruce Lee had him in Enter the Dragon, you really saw him at his best. But why I'm so intrigued by him, number one, is he, like Bruce Lee, is, I think he's, his success plays off of mostly his persona. That guy was really cool. Like, he knew how to work, even if it's a little bit on the sort of cheesy side, he knew how to like work his charisma with the winks and the whole, he embraced it and somehow made it work. But he also, what's so interesting to me about him is that his career was like one of those careers you could almost say started at the peak,
yeah,
and then went like downhill from there. Everything that he did was lesser and lesser in terms of production. You know, he starts off on Enter the Dragon, which granted wasn't that big of a budget. I mean, it was barely $1 million, I think. And but it was, as far as the publicity, et cetera, it was the biggest thing he had ever done, right?
Right.
And ever would do, and anyone would do for that matter. So he gets on there by fluke because the part wasn't even meant for Jim Kelly. It was meant for another guy who ignorantly said, I don't want to do one of those kind of kung fu movies. He probably regretted that his whole life. But then Jim Kelly steps in and gets that. And then by the time he's done with his career, he's doing like, you know, like the one we're talking about now, The Tattoo Connection, but particularly with the Al Adamson's movies. Anybody who hasn't seen the Al Adamson movies like Death Dimension and Black Samurai, which he did right before he came and did this one. You have to see these movies. They're like the Ed Wood of martial arts movies.
Right.
And if you watch, what's funny about the movies, for those who have, pick up Severin's box set if you can afford it. It's probably like $500 now because it's a limited edition. But he's driving around in a car. He's playing in Black Samurai. He's playing the cool, you know, superhero guy, which is a great movie, by the way. It's so funky and hilarious. But he's driving his own car. The license plate says J. Kelly on it. I mean, that's how low budget it was. But anyway, he's always fascinated me. I hope somebody out there really does a well-researched book on him, because I would read it in a second.
Yeah, you know, he strikes me, you know, he's not a very good actor, but you said it, he's got
charisma, right?
Yeah, it's charisma. It always reminds me, like, if you see somebody like Peyton Manning try to act in a commercial, you can be like, you know, you're just not in your element, sir. We understand that you're good at other things, but, you know, it's kind of like it's like he's there because he's cool and not because of anything else.
Yeah.
I always just assumed he was a great martial artist. So to hear that.
Well,
maybe...
I should, you know, it's unfair of me to say that, because it's sort of like, it's more me from an analytical point, looking at him, looking at his techniques, et cetera.
Yeah.
He has his own style. Don't get me wrong. He's even got speed to him, and he's got that long, lanky limbs. But I'm just saying, from a technical analysis, to watch him, or at least what he does on camera, it's a little funky. I don't, you know, and a great example will be in this movie at the end, when you watch somebody like Tan Tao Ling, who was a very accomplished martial artist, and him fighting, when they start, you know, they have their little fight scene together, and just watch their kicks.
I've always noticed that too.
Yeah.
The way he kicks a little stiff.
Flicky. It's like his thigh doesn't move. It goes up a little bit, and then the calf just kind of turns upside down. It's, you know what it is? It's very Kempo. That's from the Kempo style of like roundhouse kicks was kind of like this over top kind of kick. Very different than like a roundhouse kick from Taekwondo or Tang Sudo. And you'll even see it, I think, in the interview with Tan Tao Ling. You could tell he's trying to be very diplomatic about it. He's going, yeah, well, his kicks, you know, his kick's not so good. But, you know, I don't know him. I could have sparred with him, and he could have knocked me out for all I know. So I'm just trying to say, but I'm just saying from that standpoint, and, you know, I don't want to speak ill of the departed as well, but, there was something fun, but that funkiness is kind of what makes him charming. You watch him in the slow motion fight scene in Three the Hard Way, where he's fighting the cops in the middle of a windy Chicago street. Mm-hmm. It's just all in slow motion. But anyways, we're going on and on about Jim Kelly, I think, which is worth it because he's such a character. And,
yeah.
And part of, because we didn't even mention this, but and maybe you'll be picking stuff up as we go. This movie, by the way, is not as over-the-head Bruceploitation as many of the ones we talk about. And I think part of that, that we are even including it here, is there's just so many elements that you know, pay a trip, you know, a tip of the hat to Bruce that we just had to include it. And one of those is, of course, you know, putting Jim Kelly in it the way he's in this.
Yeah. Yep, I agree with you.
So now that's a big introduction to Jim Kelly showing up at the board meeting.
Yes, you got it. That's exactly where we're at. So, yeah, he comes in there announcing it. He calls himself the $6 million man or something like
yeah.
that. I don't know if he's already holding his tennis rackets because, again, God bless the 70s and 80s and creating this love for some sport that nobody gives a crap about anymore. I don't know of a single person I've known for in the last 20 years to play tennis anymore.
Yeah, that's right. That was his, yeah. his that was his deal though, man. He loves yeah. tennis.
Yeah, he came, yeah, so he shows up and he comes to meet his friend and he's got his tennis rackets and he tells his friend what happened. It was pretty funny. We cut to a club, what's his name? Boss Lou or Mr. Lou or whatever is trying to sell the diamond to some Americans and they're lowballing him. So he's like, oh yeah, well, I'll just give it to my fiance. Takes off. And I guess at this point they announce a reward for it. So that gets people more interested. Jim and his crew. So he's friends with the police lieutenant and I forgot who the other guy was. It really doesn't matter. Well, there was the Inspector Lou that was with him at the club, and then right. it was him, and then there was another guy. Was it the American from the hospital?
The American from the hospital. Oh, yeah, I think so. The you mean that shows up with him at the
at the club?
Beginning? Yeah,
I couldn't remember if it's that or does he have another American friend there? I just watched this last week for the third time. I don't know. Doesn't really matter. I'm going off on my own tangent, but we get to meet, I think, most of the characters at that point. We have, get them some girls. Girls are a man's best friend. So it's sort of a throwback to Enter the Dragon about Jim being sort of the ladies' man who, you know, needs all the girls.
Well, now that we've finished our drinks, I think it's about time for you to introduce us to some ladies.
Oh, yes, of course I'll find you some ladies.
You certainly don't believe in wasting much time.
Hey, George. Diamonds are a girl's best friend. You should know that.
Oh, they definitely worked the angle of the being the black man in Hong Kong in this one. As a matter of fact, if you were able to pull that black guy, the line, that black guy from, and put them all together, you'd probably have a good string to play here, about 20 people saying it.
Yeah. You know, the girlfriend in this, what was her name? Let me see. I didn't catch her name.
Lee something. I can't remember her name. But she only did. She did this in Bruce and the Iron Finger. Those are the only two movies I know that she ever did.
Gotcha. Well, she was obviously there because she's pretty. And you know, she's sort of a subplot in herself too, because her boyfriend here. This is when Jim comes and meets him, and he threatens him. So the dude flips and says, "Okay, I'll show you what you need." It was kind of a funny scene because right at that moment. I think it was Boss Lou or someone else was just totally standing at the window listening.
Oh, right. When he's got, he's trying to get the information out of him. Yeah, Chang Dao.
Yeah, that's funny. So this leads us to our awesome lumberyard fight.
Yeah, and this is great because I actually have a photo. It's a really cool photo of that Lee So Nam gave me of them shooting this sequence. And Bruce Lang is on top of the car, like showing some fight stuff. But and one of the things that I wanted to talk to him about, and it's probably good to note here as we start getting into the fight scenes, that he liked working with Bruce Lang a lot. Like he, but it's interesting because he even said on this film, Lee So Nam told me that because of Bruce Long's like interest in filming and directing and choreography, that usually when the fight scenes would go, Lee would kind of put them together with Bruce and then he would take off. Like he would let Bruce shoot him and then Lee would go shoot some other stuff, some like first unit stuff. And so most of the fight scenes you'll see in this, there could have been points where Lee Sonam wasn't even there because he told me that sometimes he would let Bruce go ahead and shoot it the way he wanted after the, you know, once they discussed it. But this lumberyard scene, I just for kind of context for those who'd seen it, I'm going to actually read a paragraph that this is Lee Sonam, and I think it's better than trying to explain it because I had just asked him about the planning that they did in terms of the choreography, et cetera, because I wanted to know how he worked with Bruce Leung with directing the sequences. Some directors like to direct all the fights, you know, and some just step away. So I asked him about that, and he goes, yes, it's all planned out ahead of time, meaning the fight sequences, because we need a lot of props like cars and such. Basically all planned out ahead. You need time to prepare. Like we have a joke. One scene, Jim Kelly had to grab a car from the top while it's driving. It was all set up on the scene, and the assistant rehearsed it, all ready to go, but he wouldn't go on. He said we were crazy. How could we just shoot like this? In other country, you have to have insurance and safety features all in place before you start shooting. We had nothing. Jim said, what if I fall and get hurt? So the truth was, all those scenes ended up using stuntmen instead. I just inserted a few close-ups of him. So you can see, our films do lack protection. We can't compare to what they have in Hollywood. I remember Jim yelled at me, crazy man. Well, not directly to me. He wouldn't go that far. But he yelled at the fight assistants. I mean, he was right. What if he went and got hurt? But you know, for people here, they don't have that much to bargain with. So they just did it anyway.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Yeah, that was a great scene. I mean, it's just so ridiculous. The cars just kept ramming. There were so many moments where you're like, well, just get out. And like, yeah, but no, they wanted to use the props. They used the props. It was great.
Yep. No, it is a funny scene. And you can totally see how when Jim gets on the top of the car, he's because there is a sequence where he does ride it one way and he spins around in the same shot and goes the other way. And I can just tell he's probably like hating life at that moment.
Absolutely. That's amazing. Well, okay, so I called that the car kung fu scene. That was great. The boyfriend's picked up by the bad crew and brutalized, murdered, all that good stuff. So he's out of the picture at this point. So we cut to the plans to cut the diamond. So he couldn't sell the diamond, so now he wants to cut the diamond. For some reason, this old man says it's going to take 7 days to cut it because it's such a precise thing, and he wants, like, all these girls.
It's a true creation of God.
Old man, how many days?
It's perfect. Wonderful.
We know it's a damn good one. Your job is just to cut it. How long would you want to cut the damn thing?
At least 10 days.
That's too long.
And 7.
All right.
Same thing.
Oh, God, that's hilarious, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was amazing.
There's a lot of nudity worked into this movie. If you see the uncut version, that's for sure.
I must have watched the cut version. I watched the version.
Oh,
that was
did
on...
you? Okay, yeah. If you see the uncut, there's probably at least 5 different nude scenes in this.
That makes so much more sense because there's some weird scenes. Like earlier, girlfriend was like taking off her top
with hot dog. Then, with hot dog,
yeah,
guy? Right.
Yeah, with hot dog guy, and she they didn't show anything. So in my notes, I was like,
oh no, she gets dressed in front of undressed in front of the mirror and climbs in bed totally naked. I mean, you see her full frontal.
Oh wow! So that's hilarious.
So yeah, all the guys right now that are googling this movie are like going, "Let me make sure this is the uncut scene by determining that moment in the movie."
Oh, seriously? Yeah. So I watched the one that's on Tubi because it was free and it was pretty high quality.
Got it. This one's on. I saw one on YouTube that was uncut. At least that, you know, as far as the nudity was concerned.
So. I gotta learn to remember the uncut. Well, I just wonder what else got cut out of it. You know how the censors are so weird in different countries.
Yeah.
Wherever it was censored, like if they cut out a nunchaku scene or if they cut out you know.
They didn't cut the nunchaku scene, did you? You didn't see the whole one with Jim Kelly and Bolo when they fight with the new. That's all in there, right? You saw it?
Yeah, that's all in there. But we wonder if anything else got cut. So
I'm just kidding. Okay.
That would be amazing. So the old man was really funny because with the girls, that was another one of those times. There's actually a sequence it's like 30 seconds long, maybe even longer, and it's just sort of like showing his mouth making kind of like shapes. It's like, I guess
Whose
it's
mouth?
Supposed to be the old man. I think it's supposed to be he's in ecstasy or something like that.
But
since they've cut all the stuff around it, you have no idea what's happening. There's even another scene where he's like staring at the diamond. Or no, he's using his diamond like eyeglass thing to stare at the girl's knee or something like that.
Yeah, he runs that thing up and down her whole body. So that's
right.
Much funny.
So yeah, they left in little parts that made it so it looks just completely ridiculous.
And that's another example. One of the things about this movie that you know, whether it's played to the best effect or not, that I like about Lee So-Nam's, you know, focus, and he'll do this. A film like The Hot, the Cool, and the Vicious is another example. Is he creates certain dilemmas going on between the characters. Like, you know, in this one, we have this interesting dynamic with Tan Tao Ling and his girlfriend, you know, Nana, that the Lee character, and that, of course, plays into his, you know, his whole dilemma with his boss. And not only that, but the competition with Jim Kelly, because at one point, as you'll get to later, when she goes to see Jim Kelly, it plays into their kind of connection. It's the same thing with the uncle. The uncle's in here, and he's like sort of this extraneous sort of character, but it's his uncle, and they're connected. And so there's ways in this movie, you know, just even the Jim Kelly Tan Tao Ling relationship is as Lee So-Nam does often in his movies. He likes to have two sort of hero characters that are just at odds with each other through most of the movie, like Don Wong Dao was with him in Hot, Cool, and Vicious or Challenge of Death, etc. Anyway, I like that about this. One of the things I like about this movie is those – it's not everything's just kind of cut and dry and you move ahead. There's sort of like little – it's almost like all the characters are linked by a thread that sort of is easy to get frayed, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's funny. Okay, my next note. Oh yeah, I have. It's funny. I'm like girlfriend nagging him about Mr. Liu. So this is with Bruce and girlfriend, and she just goes on for like a full 2 minutes. Why do you love him so much more than me?
Mm-hmm.
Blah blah blah. Exactly. I was like, oh my gosh. Anyway, that was funny because it happens again later as well. So that's something that the director obviously that was really important. Just have her nag him. Nag him a lot. I felt like I was
I felt like
I was married again.
Right, but that's what I mean. It's like you're right. I mean, it's how it's handled, you can argue good or bad, but this idea that he's, you know, he's this kind of orphan gut character that, you know, first, when you're watching this movie, you're almost sure he's going to end up being a cop undercover, but then you realize he's not. He's just this guy who was an orphan who kind of is being misled by, you know, in a sort of a Faustian way by his boss. And then he's got this girlfriend that he's, you know, it's his girlfriend that he's in love with, but then she's like the hooker for the boss. And it's like, and it's sort of like this whole weird kind of like connection between all of them, you know. And when he's at the club and she's dancing for Jim Kelly and he's getting all worked up.
That's amazing. Yeah. All right. Well, next up, we find the boyfriend dead. And this is where we finally get introduced to the tattoo.
Yeah.
So the tattoo connection is connected.
That's
right. I was laughing because it showed a tattoo parlor and he walked in. I'm like, what are the chances it's the first place?
Yeah,
he
that's
into?
Right. He does.
I was laughing. But then he drops some dialogue that actually says, I've been asking all over town.
Yeah,
Like, oh, okay. All right. That's fine. I see. We're back at the club. Bolo is now ordered to murder Jim. This is when we get the Miss Nana performance.
Right, correct, yeah. Which is.
And that's probably why, yeah. I think I have those out of order. So it should have been she did the dance and, you know, was talking with Jim, and that's kind of when the Mr. Liu was to Bolo. He's like, you need to murder him.
Yeah, which it's a great – if you watch the lines in this are classic. There's some great lines in this, but one of them is – it's so wonderfully dated where he's like, don't you want to be friends? She goes, well, I don't want to be friends because I don't know you and because you're black. But he's like completely unfazed by it. He's like, oh, baby. And he gives her a smile and a wink. This is the best.
That's amazing. Okay, now we get another fight sequence. This is the one. It's on a big
stairwell.
Big stairway. Yeah, that was pretty cool. The police break it up right when the Bruce Jim's showdown starts up. So We didn't get that fulfilled yet, and we really don't, do we?
I love that you're calling him Bruce. Yeah. No, and that is, it's where we now set up the two of them starting to have their little competition.
I mean, I think he's the Bruciest guy in it.
Oh, yeah, right? Yeah. No, for sure. For sure he is. I mean, we do have a Bruce behind the camera, obviously doing the fight choreography, Bruce Long, but...
Right.
You're right. But with Jim Kelly, sort of the representative of Bruce Lee from Enter the Dragon, but then character-wise, you're right, Tantau Lang would be the hero.
I mean, if they swapped the two even, you'd just be like, well, now it's this classic Bruceploitation movie.
Yeah. It's not that far. Like I said, it could almost be one if they did a few other things to it.
Okay, so we're up to Mr. Liu was being a shit to Nana, just treating her poorly.
And not only that, just to mention in that moment, I think this is the only movie I've ever seen where a guy calls a woman a bastard.
That's great. Bastard. I said implied rape because in my copy, it looked like Mr. Liu was potentially doing something bad to her, but you couldn't tell.
Right.
You know, it was a lot of more face close-ups again and stuff like that. More nagging. This was the second half of that.
Yeah.
And then we actually cut to, we're back with Fat Dog. So Fat Dog's still wounded. He wants to get involved with this this reward. So same kind of thing happened again. I think people just saw him talking to him or something. So now poor Fat Dog, he gets killed later or something like that. I don't know. We have a great Enter the Dragon scene. It's Jim Kelly standing on the boat as the boat goes across. I just thought that was funny because it was literally just like the beginning of Enter the Dragon when they're all taking the little boats over to the bigger boat.
Right, the sampans, yeah.
Yeah.
So you're Fat Dog?
Yes. I want to be friends.
Really? You call me out here just to make friends?
I have some information.
Can I trust you?
Do you know who called the police the other night when you were surrounded?
So you call the police?
Why, of course I did.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, that's exactly what it was. So Fat Dog got caught, and we don't know how it happened, but then, yeah, there was the Fat Dog battle, and they drown him. And that was actually pretty good. I was rooting for Fat Dog. I thought, you know, he was holding himself up pretty well, and...
Yeah, it was an interesting character. Again, another one of those characters that kind of just sort of comes in and you're like, I'm not sure what his point will be. And then it does have a little payoff at some point, you know.
And Fat Dog's so big, he made Bolo look small.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't positive it was Bolo in that scene at first until, you know, I saw his face because he did not have the stature I'm used to seeing out of Bolo.
And even though he's dressed, if you look at Chan Sing, he's the boss. I mean, he almost makes Bolo look small. He's got a barrel old chest.
Big guys. Yeah. That's amazing. So Jim was waiting for him. Nobody ever showed up. My next line is that the diamond uncle is a pervert. So that must have been the loop scene where he's
going up and down. Yeah, with the face.
I think we're to the Bolo threatening the dude by killing his
rabbit. Oh, yes. Rabbit warning in this one, folks. If you don't want to see animals getting abused, you don't want to watch this part.
I love rabbits, and I just...
It was pretty hardcore, because there's clearly a moment where Bolo slams one of the rabbits onto the deck of the ship, and it's not very... it's not good.
No, that was terrible. So, he's saying we're going to make rabbit stew, and, Bolo's a rabbit murderer. But then our Bruce character, or whatever we want to call him, he stops him. Yep. Yeah, he stops him. It's cool.
Yeah, we get a little nice little fight between Tantau Lang and now if you watch... And Bolo, I was going to say. If you watch this sequence, you can tell there was a little re-editing going on because all of the guys in the sequence are wearing the outfits they will wear again later at the very end. So after this, they'll change and they'll go through some more, but then they'll come back to the boat again, the same ship. It's the same location. All Bolo goes from that tank top to a shirt back to his tank top. Bolo actually has the coolest wardrobe in this. And Chang Dao had told me, you know, often in these movies, they just bring their own clothes. So I was like going, he's got some cool shirts, man. Mm-hmm. He's wearing like the muscle tees and I don't know, man. I want to look him up on eBay one of these days. But that if you watch that scene closely, you can tell it was intended to be part of the ending.
I love it. Okay, so the next scene was hilarious. It's the chess scene.
Right. Great metaphor moment.
Yeah, that was awesome. He's like leading him on move by move. And he's like... Huh. Well, it seems to me. I'm actually going to put that quote in here, so I'll just let it go there.
I think you've got me this time.
You could cover with your bishop.
Ah, I see. That's a fantastic move. But George, it looks like you're playing both sides of the fence.
What do you mean?
It seems that you've already arranged all my moves for me. I'm always the loser. That's why I must change it. Checkmate.
And see, this is where, this is where Jim can sometimes succeed other action stars, I think, as an interest to the audience, you know, where others can't, which is just sitting there doing a chess game. You know, look at Jim, again, you know, it may be kitschy, it may be, you know, over the top, it may be just too cool for school kind of thing, but he does it so well. Like, I don't mind sitting there watching him play chess. You know, I might get as much as Ed Tantowling's like one of my idols and heroes, a mentor, a teacher, but I don't know if I'd watch him play chess as much as I like to watch him kick.
Yeah, that's amazing. Let's see. That means, oh yeah. So yeah, we find out that the friend ends up being a bad guy. He was in on it all along, and he just straight up gets murdered at that point by the bad guys. So it was just over. He was sort of a, I think he was like a trick. We thought he was a good guy. We find out he's a bad guy and that he was setting all this stuff up, and then they just quickly kill him off anyway. So it didn't really matter.
That happens.
Now it's time for Miss Nana to try to, I guess, have sex plus give him drugs to kill him.
Right, and this is that moment where Jim, you know, here's Tantowling once again watching his boss, who he's been idolizing, send the girl he loves to go try and seduce Jim Kelly. It's like this, it's like drives him to, drives him crazy.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Yeah, because it's like, well, and she says something funny to the effect of like, well, I'll only have sex with him once or whatever, but it's like, I'll only kill him once or whatever.
Right.
Something funny like that, yeah. The drinks, I thought that was funny. He adds all the eggs to his thing.
He has that egg drink, this, right? And she's put the poison in his drink, but then
he's like, I'm going to make my own here, and thinks anyway.
Does a little switcheroo.
Okay, so now we're going to cut to Bolo and crew. This is the Bolo part where they do the sing-songy.
Great moment. I know. This is a great moment. This is where they group around Tantowling and sort of antagonize him by singing about his girlfriend. But they're all like – it just reminded me of such a scene out of an American gangster movie or something. It was great.
There once was a lonely man who once said all for his love, for his love, he wanted all, though she had it all before. He saw no fault with his love, and neither did all his friends. All his friends.
We're singing. I want you to stop it.
Why don't you make all of us stop it?
Absolutely. Bruce beats on him again. we get Nana's special performance, and then Bruce comes for Miss Nana. And this is where the boss and Bruce are going to have some problems, because the boss is very angry.
He is.
Bruce is to... Oh, yeah. You need to go kill the black guy, and then you can take the girl and leave, which was obviously a lie, too, because the bad guy was in control of everything. But I thought that was another funny point where they're still not using a name for him or anything.
That's what
like
I mean.
That.
They just keep going, the black guy. Hey, well, the black guy. Where's the black guy, boss? Where's the black boy? Yeah.
Yeah, so we had a little fight between Jim and Bruce, and then that's broken up, and then it's versus Mr. Liu, but then out of the blue he gets captured, which I thought was really interesting, because in a moment when he comes back, he wasn't even locked up or anything. unless they cut something out of there. It was like, were they holding him on the ground, like, and got up to go fight somebody, and he was just able to get back
you
up?
You mean, no, when the guy comes to rescue him, you mean the friend, the rabbit kid.
Right. Yeah. 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 So the old man eats the diamond, which I thought was hilarious. Yeah. He was never going to cut the diamond in the first place because he was in love with it. And the boss goes back on his promise for Bruce and Nana to leave. So he's beating the girl. And this is what starts with the whole big final fight. So there was Mr. Lou versus Bruce. There was the shirtless Jim who comes jumping over the top of the boat. This is what you're saying. Yeah, they all came back wearing the same clothes. And I actually had a note here to ask you who was the guy with Bolo. So there it is.
Yeah, and you know, you get... It's interesting because the end the end sequence, we get this, you know, big fight on a boat, obviously. We get a little bit of a conjecturized sort of... it's not a word, conjecturized. The conjecture of what if Williams had fought Bolo on Han's Island.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And here we get a little taste of it in this movie. But then the other thing that's interesting is what doesn't happen in this, which was, in my mind, a Lee So-Nam classic move, is we don't really get Tantaling. So what's the weird thing about this sequence is that that's very not like Lee So-Nam, is that we don't get Jim Kelly and Tantaling teaming up to fight Chan Sing. They sort of, Tan Tao Ling fights him, gets kind of knocked aside, and then Jim Kelly comes in and fights him, and you have to see the movie to see the ending. But they don't. There's never really a two-on-one where the pair teams up and that may be part of what led to these ideas and legends about Dorian Tan and Jim Kelly being at each other. I can tell you from talking to Bruce Long, talking to Lee So-Nam and Tan Tao Ling, my impression is Tan Tao Ling just said, hey, you know, he was an American. He didn't understand our customs there. So he kind of, in a very nice diplomatic way, probably made it sound like Jim was a little like put off by their working methods. You know, Lee So-Nam confirmed that by, you know, talking about. So I think the ending of the film where we don't get Tan Tao Ling and Jim Kelly pairing up sort of lent to the sort of the legends and myths about them at being hating each other and fighting on the set or whatever. But from talking to Tan Tao Ling, who was very diplomatic in his expressing of, you know, Jim Kelly, and some of this comes up in the Hand of Death Blu-ray, but saying, you know, oh, he just didn't understand our customs. And, you know, I mean, he was fine. You know, I could just kind of tell he was just like, just saying, well, you know, he didn't get us. So that's why it was a pain in the ass.
I bet it would be a big culture shock compared to, you know, doing films
in
LA.
He'd worked in Hong Kong before, but then he was working on, you know, a Warner Brothers film. So it's going to be handled a lot different, you know, in Golden Harvest. So,
and you've mentioned that, like, sometimes these guys will be doing multiple movies at the same time, you know, like some of these.
Yeah.
Yeah, these actors. So it's a different studio system for sure. You know, it's like, it reminds me more of like the 50s Hollywood in terms of, you know, you pay these guys X amount of money and you make them show up and everything and fight and blah, blah,
exactly,
blah.
Exactly. And yeah. Bruce Long had said to me, you know, oh, yeah, I was always having to deal with these guys. They were always having problems, you know. So, you know, everybody had a little bit of their own takeaway. So my takeaway from talking to all three of them would be that, you know, yeah, sure, I think Jim was getting a little annoyed. And then as a... And, you know, if you're in America and you see somebody get annoyed, you almost kind of, you know, as an American, you might get it. Probably in Hong Kong, you see a Hong Kong guy get annoyed, you get it. But maybe when they two cross over, you're like, is he being disrespectful? Is he being angry at us? Or whatever it might be, you know. So
right.
I'm sure there was a little truth to it from the sounds of it, but they certainly didn't seem to try to kill each other.
One thing I love about the low budgetness of a lot of these films is it leads to some... ingenious ways of using stuff to accomplish what somebody else might have had to use money for special effects or something like that. And again, I'm talking in this particular movie about the end ending, which I guess we're not going to spoil, but I think that scene was hilarious.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Cool. Well, that's it. That was Tattoo Connection.
The Tattoo Connection, my man. That was good.
All right. Well, what's our next one?
You know what? It's been so long. I haven't even. Maybe we need to have another write it and do another contest or determine it.
Okay.
You know? Yeah. I think what I would like to do actually, I mean, we can still do it, but I would like to bring somebody on, whether it's the next one or the one after, is Frank Jang, who we talked about. Frank Jang and I have been doing a number of commentaries lately. We did Hand of Death. We actually have Tower of Death. We're on coming up. I think it's being included in the Bruce Lee box set. So, you know, we've done a number of Cynthia Rothrock movies and we've probably done about a dozen of them now. So I think Frank would be great to bring on, and we'll have a conversation with him one of these days. So.
Cool. Well, you give me a list of five choices, and I'll throw them out on our Twitter and Instagram and stuff, and we'll get some votes.
Okay. Well, if you guys are listening to this early enough, check his social media.
You got it. Yeah, this this should be out pretty quickly now. We're recording this on a Thursday. So, yeah, just a couple days. I'll have.
Okay. Good.
So, we got the next one. All right. Thank you, Michael, and I'm looking forward to that, and we'll see you next month.
See you then. Keep your eyes peeled for the documentary, Enter the Clones of Bruce.
Yeah, badass. Yep. Till next time.
All right, buddy.